welcome back, my good friend David.
Yeah.
How's it going?
It's good to be back, Andrew. We have had this very unexpected hiatus from the pod, but it's good to be back. I have been busy.
Yeah. We've had, all of our fans kind of, being disappointed the past few weeks, hotly anticipating the next episode that we kind of teased.
Yeah.
And then didn't really follow through on it for weeks. And we got so many messages about it. So many.
Oh, yeah. People were really upset that we didn't come through and haven't been keeping their podcast feed up to date. And everyone's just been wanting to know, what does David think about Kawhi? What does David think about Kemba? No one's asked me about what Andrew thinks, but I'm sure that's implicit,
No, I've had lots of personal messages, actually.
Oh, really?
They tweet at my personal account, actually, not at the... I don't know. It's a weird thing. They kind of like me better or something like that.
On Twitter?
I am on Twitter, yeah. I am on Twitter, but I have my own account for the politics side, and then I use the Raptors room for
okay. Well, we should be on Twitter more, I think. That's one thing we need to do. All our fans are trying to reach out, and we're just not active enough on social media.
They're like, you don't post enough. We want more posts.
They
got to get better.
They say that we should post more, and they say we should post better.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got to work on that.
Yeah. Well... So we're actually not going to do the episode that we promised doing right now today.
Right.
We decided that obviously, since our last episode, we were talking about how we were champions.
Yeah.
We still are, folks. Yeah. Don't forget that the Raptors are the fucking NBA champions.
Yeah. There's a lot of noise right now about, this upcoming season, but one thing that will be true objectively throughout the year is that we will be the defending champs.
Yeah, it's an easy rebuttal anytime someone comes up to you and be like, Kawhi left you guys, and what do you think about the upcoming NBA season? And then your reply should just be a picture of Kyle Lowry holding the trophy.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the reply.
Well, because
that's the reality.
That's the best.
That's the fact.
It's the best reply. We are still pretty committed. Well, 100% committed to doing the episode that we talked about doing, which was to kind of pick up on the bullshit that Masai dealt with the Oakland police, and then using that story to maybe draw some comparisons between the kind of political climate and the U.S. versus Canada, and then how the Raptors season and playoff run and eventual title and the parade and all that, how that kind of maybe contributed to some of the misunderstandings about that difference between the U.S. and Canada, but also some of the myth building that goes on in Canada. I think that's one of the biggest things that we encounter as Canadians and as a Canadian here in the States, is that there's this idea that Canada is like this kind of liberal mecca where there's no racism and there's none of these problems that you see in the news here in the States. So we do want to do that episode, and we are going to get some help from a good friend of ours who's a little bit smarter than us on this stuff anyway. But we just haven't been able to put that together yet. I was having a busy time. I was up in Massachusetts, and actually, maybe we can even use this photo as the episode photo, or at least use it in the future. I was at the airport in Boston, and there was the most cursed image of just all the different Boston teams merch. And I was like, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? For the listeners, I know I've talked a little bit about doing labor work down here in Jacksonville, but my actual pursuit, well, not my actual pursuit, union work is a pursuit too, but this other thing that's been kind of in the background has been pursuing ordination in a church. And I finally got to that point where I was approved for ordination, and then I got a job at a small church in Massachusetts, rural Massachusetts. So I was traveling there, back there again, to bring that together. And I'm excited that move is approaching. Yeah. And so that's what's kept us away from the pod.
Yeah, huge congratulations, man, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
That's really big news, and we're all really excited for you. I know myself and all your friends back in Toronto, we're all rooting for you. And especially you entering enemy territory, as you said, Massachusetts, which is, you'll be close by to Boston, which, as we all know, is, the worst place to be in terms of, especially the sports world.
Yeah.
So you're going to go and convert them all into better humans, because
that will be a big part of the ministry. Obviously, I slow played that a little bit during the interview process. I didn't want to, it's very controversial. We talked a lot about politics, theology, how to do church and stuff, but we kind of steered clear of sports. But Eventually. Yeah, eventually we'll get there, you know, when there's enough trust there.
Yeah, you'll convert all those silly Celtics fans to true Raptors fans, you know, the bright side, you know.
Yeah. Well, and it's going to take time. You have to have a lot of patience in ministry, and that in particular is going to be a long road, but you got to meet people where they're at and then slowly but surely challenge them and bring them around. It's going to be an interesting contrast because when I moved to Jacksonville, like, it was pretty easy to figure out the sports culture here. Like, it's all football, and I didn't have like a football team. Like, I know there's the CFL, and my mom is from Calgary, and so she always raised me to be a Stampeders fan, a Stamps fan. But, you know, that's not really a competitor with the NFL or with college football. So it was so easy to kind of come here and assimilate and embrace the Gators and the Jaguars. You know, especially the Jaguars, they're a pretty likable, lovable bunch, you know. But that is not going to be the situation in Massachusetts. I'm going to have to deal with truly the worst, the bottom of the barrel sports fans. It's a new challenge. It's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a true good versus evil struggle that you'll be dealing with right there.
That's what's nice about it. Yeah, there's no moral ambiguity. It's very clear. No.
It's very black and white. Yeah, definitely. But you just got back from your trip, and you know, we wanted to make sure that we gave the episode that we teased last time its due and, you know, give it its proper depth and analysis. And, you know, we'll have a friend coming on. So we're saving that pod till later in the off season. And I'm sure there'll be lots of time then. But in the meantime, you know, we would like to do a pod where we gave our incredible takes on this wild off season that we've had so far. And it's been crazy.
It's time to reply to all those DMs and all those messages and all those phone calls, those late night phone calls I've been getting from friends and fans. So let's catch up on the off season. Cause this is like, I think this is the most like NBA off season insanity I've ever seen, like craziness particularly on free agency on July 1, or I guess June 30th, really. Right. It was early this year.
Yeah, is it June 30th? I mean, there was supposed to be the moratorium, and then June 30th at 6 was when it was supposed to all start. But obviously, you know, teams just tamper wildly now, and all the discussions and deals have been basically already agreed upon for the most part, like even before the 6 o'clock clock hit, right?
So, yeah.
But it was wild. You look at the NBA now versus the NBA just last season, and
I know
it feels like everything has changed. It's wild.
Yeah.
So I think we should start with, you know, the big one, the one that is most, you know, near and dear to the hearts of Raptors fans.
Yeah.
Kawhi Leonard is no longer a Toronto Raptor.
Oh, God.
But let's just remember the Toronto Raptors are still NBA champions. Kawhi didn't take that with him. We still have that.
You can't do that. Yeah, you can't take that with you.
And I don't know if we talked about this in the pod, but I've had this discussion before Kawhi made his decision. People would ask, would you rather have a Raptors championship this year or Kawhi resigning 5 years? And I would obviously take the championship every time. That's the whole point of this thing, right?
What do you think? Okay, so you're right. You're right. The whole point is to win a title and a guaranteed title versus uncertain run of titles over the next 5 seasons. You got to go with the sure thing, but that is tough because Kawhi really did convince me that he's the greatest player alive right now, and it does feel like if we had him for 5 years locked in, we would have maybe more than one title to show for it. So it's not quite as easy or as obvious as you might think at first, I think. But God, this was crazy. That was a whole week, the whole like
It was Kawhi Watch week, right?
It was Kawhi Watch, and God, you and I were both pretty confident he would re-sign.
Yeah. I mean, all the signs pointed to it, right? Like, no one could have seen this coming.
But people did, though. Because of the LA thing, because he's from there and wanted to go home, and that was a big part of why he wanted out of the Spurs.
I mean, I should preface that, you're right. People, like, most of the American media was predicting that he would leave, but like all the reports that have come out since made it seem like, you know, he was going to the Clippers if he had another star with him, like if he believed that they could be title contenders. And that's basically where I've landed. I know there's been a lot of, you know, little bits of news popping up here and there about the whole process and Kawhi's mindset. And ultimately, we'll probably never find out for sure what Kawhi's thought process was. I truly believe that If the Clippers had not struck that Paul George deal, Kawhi would be a Raptor today.
I think you're probably right. My read on it is that he was stringing the Lakers along as kind of a incentive for the Clippers to go out and get somebody. Obviously he used the Raptors in a similar way, but I think if he doesn't sign with, if the Clippers don't go out and get Paul George, which is the other big part of this that went down on the Friday night after the Friday after free agency opened, if they don't get Paul George, I think he probably signs like a 1-1 with Toronto, which gives him the chance to just run it back and repeat with a group of guys that I think he obviously really enjoyed playing with, and with a general manager and a coach that he trusted and a medical staff that he trusted, all that stuff. But I don't think there was a long-term commitment in the play for Toronto.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. And the reason why I think that, you know, if they hadn't gotten that second star in the LA Clippers, you know, Kawhi, we talked about this, but and this has been talked about by some of the Toronto local sports guys, especially Will Liu, and their whole Kawhi Watch series. You know, they talked about how Kawhi, time and again in his interviews, especially after the championship, kept talking about how, you know, this was the most fun he's ever had in a basketball season. He kept singing praise about his teammates. And everything through praising the medical staff, praising Masai, and all the little signs that pointed to him enjoying his time here. But ultimately, I think, you know, Kawhi, as we've known for a while now, he is an LA guy and, you know, had a desire to ultimately live there. It sounds like he had a lot of family there as well. And, you know, him being originally from there, his girlfriend, his partner being originally from there as well. You know, his agent, Uncle Dennis, also being from there. He's clearly, you know, a very strong family guy. And so he had his ties to there. But ultimately, it seemed like his number one priority was winning a championship. And if he felt like he couldn't get that with the Clippers, he was going to re-sign with Toronto. And I also, this is speculative, and people have speculated about this, you know, throughout the NBA media. I truly believe that Kawhi had no interest in playing with LeBron and joining the circus that was the LA Lakers. You know, that for a stretch there that week, it sounded like that was a real possibility. I think that was largely overhyped by the media and their desire to see him with the Lakers and build this new dynasty with LeBron and AD. But, you know, people have said this, you know, Kawhi doesn't seem like the kind of guy who wanted to join the Lakers. There were reports after LeBron signed with the Lakers that Kawhi revised his ideal trade destinations when he asked for a trade from the Spurs, switching the Clippers from the Lakers. Just the entire circus that happened last year with the whole Lakers organization, Magic Johnson leaving. You know, it just seems like the complete antithesis of Kawhi's personality. So everything from the reports that I've heard and just speculation makes it seem like it was really a race between either the Clippers get a second star and build a true contender for Kawhi, or he runs it back with the Raptors and has a legit chance at another shot at a title, especially with what it seems like, and we'll hopefully touch upon this in this episode, a weaker Eastern Conference. You know, even forget about Kawhi leaving the conference, there were tons of moves that made the Celtics weaker, arguably the Sixers weaker, and the Bucks weaker as well. And so they had a real shot at repeating. But, I mean, I can't deny the fact that this current Clippers team with Kawhi and Paul George, I mean, my opinion is that is
the favorites.
Championship favorites. Exactly.
Yeah, they're the favorites. I have to, I'm so torn. Like, I remember it was on Saturday that the news broke. Well, I guess Friday night, late Friday night, but I woke up to it on Saturday. And I think I spent almost the whole day talking to our group of friends, our group of basketball friends, and just kind of processing it. And it was interesting to see the range of reactions, which maybe we should talk about as well. But
yeah,
I have to say, even in the moment, like as crushed as I was, and like Katie asked me how I was feeling, we were like lying in bed, and I think she actually saw the news before me, and she like said like, hey, have you seen the news lately about, you know, because we were all on Kawhi Watch, and so immediately I knew there was news, but the way she had said it, it actually it wasn't her fault, but it was just something about the tone of her voice. It sounded like she was a little bit excited. So I thought it meant I was like opening up my browser to see the good news. I thought maybe he had re-signed and I was so excited. And then, God, I couldn't believe he was a Clipper. But I have to also say there was a part of me, you know, as like a fan of the NBA, I'm glad he went to the Clippers because it keeps kind of the league parity. Like, as much as I think the Clippers are the favorite, especially with the way it all went down with Paul George coming to the Clippers as well, I think they're the favorite. But had he joined the Lakers, it just would have felt like another super team had been put together. But having said that, I'm a LeBron James fan and I'm a an AD fan. Like, the idea of watching him suit up with LeBron and go and grab a couple quick championships, like, I would have probably cheered for that team more than I had ever cheered for the Miami team, or more than obviously I never cheered for Golden State, but that would have been a fun team to watch. So I was, in some ways, I was the most disappointed that he chose the Clippers, just in a, like, an emotional response. Yeah. But logically, and thinking about it a little bit more, like, I think it's good for the game that he went to the Clippers.
Yeah. My initial reaction. Yeah. So when I woke up, kind of a similar story. Sandra had been up before me, and as soon as I woke up, she looked at me, and I could tell that there was an announcement. Just the way she looked at me, and she said, "Have you checked your phone?" And so immediately I checked, and my immediate reaction was just shock. I was completely blindsided by the move. Like, I had been not only convinced that Kawhi was going to stay with all the ridiculous coverage that we had leading up to it with the, you know, the falling the plane and the CP24 coverage and that hilarity that ensued. But the fact that this Paul George, I mean, the Paul George trade came out of nowhere. That came out of nowhere. No one thought that was the thing specifically. Yeah. And so I was shocked by that. And, you know, as I processed that and like you, I was taking part in our group chats with our NBA friends, and, you know, increasingly, you know, as disappointed as I was that, you know, we were not going to have this Raptors championship contender again this year, there was also building in me a sense of excitement for the upcoming NBA season. And, you know, this, like, starting with this battle in LA, I mean, that's exciting, you know, just as long as you're a fan of basketball, no matter which team you cheer for, you know, being able to follow these two LA duos now, Kawhi, Paul George, facing off with LeBron and AD. I mean, that's exciting. That's super exciting. Like, if you had told me that, you know, 5 years ago that we were going to be experiencing that, I would be just so thrilled.
And that we would be experiencing it. We'd be experiencing it having won a title the year before.
Oh,
like,
yeah, absolutely.
Like, things are good. It's a good time to be a Raptors fan, and it's a good time to be a fan of the league. Like, so things have really gone well the last year. So
absolutely. And because of that, because of everything that's transpired, you know, I wasn't disappointed for that long. And, you know, there's still some, you know, every once in a while I think back and wonder, you know, we could have maybe repeated this year, but it's always, I recover with, I'm excited for this NBA season. It's not like I'm dreading the NBA season because the Raptors will be, you know, probably middle of the pack. There'll be so much exciting basketball that's happened because, you know, everything has changed. Everything has changed. There's no longer this clear-cut Golden State favorite, this dynasty that everyone is sort of looking up at. I'm pumped.
We got to be the team that kind of brought the Golden State era to an end, and everyone at work here in Jacksonville, Florida was all in on the Raptors run. And I think it's still kind of tough even thinking back about it. Like, I think what happened was that Kawhi Leonard became my favorite NBA player. He's probably the best player in the league, and he's playing for the Toronto Raptors, and he's you know, leading us to a championship. He became my favorite player. And so it's like, that was tough. That it was like, shit, like that I've probably enjoyed Kawhi Leonard as much as any basketball player since Allen Iverson in 2001, whenever he was like taking on the Lakers by himself. Like, I just had this real deep like obsession with Kawhi. He's so great, and I was just so convinced that he was coming back. And obviously, he had kind of the whole Toronto media, the whole like Raptors beat kind of fooled. And so it was a gut punch. But yeah, keeping perspective, the league is going to be so good next year. How do you feel about Kawhi? What's your personal kind of feeling? It sounds like you're okay.
Yeah, I'm okay. I think I mean, first and foremost, I will be forever grateful for what he did this year. Like, you can't not have that. I mean,
he was so good,
and he brought us this championship. I mean, I, like, you know, later in the pod I'll talk about hopefully you know, the rest of the team, but I think, you know, as as great as our supporting cast was for Kawhi and how much I think they were crucial to winning that championship was brought to us by Kawhi, fundamentally. Yeah. And to have had this year, to have experienced watching him, like you, you know, growing to love his game and just kind of being obsessed with how awesome he was. Yeah. And just any time, you know, the you know, return of the classic Raptors anxiety came back, he would be there to soothe that immediately and hit a huge shot time and again. And so I am grateful first and foremost. But I don't think, like, now that he's on the Clippers, I will be excited if he loses next
year. Right. Okay. Like, that's actually what I wanted to get to. Like, are you cheering for Kawhi? Are you cheering for the Clippers next year?
I'm not cheering for the Clippers. I will appreciate the Clippers. Like, I'll appreciate any great team. I'm not rooting actively against it. Like, I think it would be cool if Kawhi continues to win titles and builds, you know, his own legacy and potentially, you know, challenges LeBron for number one of this era or even continues beyond that. I think that would be super cool. And like you, I cheer for LeBron because I think, you know, he's this all-time great that has the potential to build a legacy that rivals Jordan. Yeah. And so that is exciting in and of itself. But on the flip side, you know, if he loses with this team, that's very stacked. It would be exciting from a Raptors fan perspective just because, you know, it would feel like, you know, our team was better. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so that'd be cool. And so either way, I think I have something to look forward to, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's, and, I don't know, we're maybe we shouldn't do this now, but I think it's interesting to think just about the raw emotion of that day and the way that people had different reactions. And I know my reaction was to get, very takey about how maybe the Clippers are not as good as they think they're going to be because, after all, Paul George has had all these injury problems. I think I used the phrase, Paul George is low-key washed, I don't know if I had my head on straight in that moment, but I also do think that this team's going to have injury issues, or at least it's going to be scary because they not only is their best player somebody who needs to be load managed, but their second best player suffered a kind of season ruining shoulder injury last year, and he's had all kinds of issues in his career.
If Paul George is like, you know, has shoulder problems next year and is kind of like regresses a little bit, I'll be by your side with the whole, we told you.
Yeah, low-key washed. Yeah, low-key washed.
You know, whispers.
Is it crazy to think that Siakam could, if he takes another leap, like, Kawhi could be like looking back and like seeing this injured Paul George that he's trying to drag over the finish line. And
that's my current hottest take is Pascal Siakam is going to be Kawhi level good next year, just because you follow the trajectory, you know, that's simple math. Wow. You know, you just follow the curve and Pascal is Kawhi next year. It's easy.
He's due for another leap. No, I think the thing is that's crazy about it is Kawhi wanted to make this happen the way that he did, which, by the way, you have to just admire Kawhi as an executive, as a guy pulling the strings, just managing this whole situation perfectly for himself, if not for the Raptors fans.
Kaiser Soze level of cunningness.
He was really brilliant, and he just, his whole camp, like, I always feel like there was this pejorative, like, oh, Uncle Dennis attitude, and maybe that all kind of even codes a little bit, like, along racist lines.
There was a little bit of racist tinges there. Anytime I heard people talking about Uncle Dennis, I would be like, what?
Yeah, like, he has a camp. Like, he has a trusted advisor. He happens to be family, and they handled this perfectly to get what they want over the last 2 years.
Now we should mention that, like, it's true that what they pulled off was incredible and, like, is incredible for Kawhi himself, but I don't know if you saw, but Masai did have a little bit of an interview where it seemed like he took shots at Uncle Dennis.
Did he? I didn't see this. Bring me up to speed.
This was at Summer League, and people, like, this was a few days after Masai was at Summer League, and people, like, the media was asking him about the situation, and someone asked him, do you feel like Kawhi and his camp were forthright and truthful to you with you during the whole free agency process? And Kawhi, and Masai was like, yes, Kawhi was. And he explicitly called out Kawhi specifically as being truthful and genuine. implying that the rest of his camp had not been. And then reports came out by, I believe it was Josh Lewinberg, who reported that during some of the meetings, it was Uncle Dennis who was asking from Masai and the Raptors organization things that they could not even provide him. Like, it was feasibly impossible. Mm-hmm. Whether, like, it's easy to speculate what that was. People have speculated, sure, like, part ownership in the Raptors or some other kind of guarantees. I think that would be cool if they gave him part ownership. That's like a separate take of mine. Yeah. But
can we do it? Can we still go back and do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm down.
The whole, but more so the whole like players as owners, I think that's kind of cool. But
besides that,
I mean, it sounds like there were maybe impossible. A little bit of ridiculousness that was going on. And, you know, that maybe is just Uncle Dennis being, you know, looking out for his client and his nephew and making sure he gets the best deal possible, which you have to respect that, right?
So. Well, and clearly there was a desire to go home, to go to LA. So you can understand that, like, the only way it was going to maybe work with Toronto was to go to some levels that maybe would be unprecedented. And so that part of me, I just admire the way they handled it. And I hadn't heard about all these some of the stuff that's come out through Summer League, but you have to kind of admire the way they got what they want. But the other thing that's tough about this, and we're joking about Paul George being low-key washed, Siakam and Kawhi combined, I think, for the most points by a duo, second most or tied for second most with Jordan and Pippen.
Yeah,
and wild. I think that's the kind of thing that it just feels like something slipped away from us. Like, Siakam is very likely to get better. I don't know if he's about to make a jump to Kawhi's level, but he's likely to get better over the next couple of years. That duo is so fit for the modern league, and it's so fit, like, with the cap space that we had coming up in the next offseason. Like, it would have been so easy to build around that group. So in some ways, it seems like Kawhi just decided that he didn't trust that Siakam was going to be his number two.
Yeah, there was, I mean, yeah, it's crazy to think about that potential and what that duo could have built. But I think you're right that Kawhi probably didn't see Pascal as that level. And frankly, like, from an unbiased perspective, you know, most people, if you pulled around the league, would you rather have Paul George or Pascal Siakam? I think still people would say Paul George.
No, of course. Yeah,
of course. Right. And I think a lot of people are still skeptical of Pascal Siakam's trajectory. You know, as much as I like to balance that out by going the other extreme, I think it's hard for people to see someone as a superstar level forward if they don't have a reliable jump shot. And so Pascal's still, you know, he's made, you know, huge progress on that front from last year, and I've been watching his Rico Hines workouts. He's had a few videos come out, and he looks great. He looks fucking sick. So I am sticking with my take that he's going to be amazing next year. But you can't blame even someone like Kawhi, who played with him last year, to, you know, put his eggs in from his perspective, a more guaranteed basket. Although I would say Paul George, with his injury history,
I mean, it's a
concern. Like you said, low key washed. So,
I think that was what was tough for me to wrap my head around, is that, like, I really thought his best basketball situation was here in Toronto, and that we had done enough that at least sign the 1+1 or the 2+1 just to, like, get to that veteran max that he's going to be eligible for in a couple of years, which, as it turns out, he ends up signing a 2+1 at the Clippers, right? He's only
right,
which he's going to hit free agency again,
which is hilarious in its own way.
Yeah, yeah.
Given that the Clippers giving away all those assets.
All right, we've talked enough about Kawhi, but before we move on to the rest of the changes, because there's so many to get to, what do you think about the Raptors next year?
So I think I'm excited to watch these Raptors, honestly. Like, you know, you have to look at it in a more of a glass, like, looking at it in a more glass half full perspective. Yeah. We get to see, you know, all of our young prospects really take full control of the wheel. You know, last year, obviously, it was the Kawhi show, and, you know, Kyle Lowry with his running as basically, you know, his number two, although Pascal emerged as the number two as the year went on. But this year, you know, there's no question, you know, what this year is about. This year is about the development of guys like Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, who, you know, we basically missed out on him all season. And, you know, people after two seasons ago, people were more excited and high on OG than Pascal. for the large part. So it'll be excited to see, you know, the leaps he makes this year. You know, obviously we have Fred VanVleet coming off a terrific playoff performance. And so it'll be exciting to watch our team. You know, they'll have a chip on their shoulder as well, right? And going into every game, you know, with the confidence of being a championship team. And potentially, I think, you know, I mean, they will definitely make the playoffs, I think, barring any serious injuries to our guys. And I think it'll be cool to see them, you know, be the underdogs in the playoffs again, potentially coming out with an upset. And, you know, that's exciting in its own way, in that this will be a zero pressure kind of year. You know,
we will be going in house money.
We're the defending champs, but we lost our superstars, so there's zero expectations from around the league and even from our own fan base, right? So it'll be kind of fun to cheer on this young up and coming team with no pressure or anxiety that we've been dealing with the past few years. And also, you know, there's the whole Giannis 2021 watch, which I don't know if we want to talk about. But
yeah, we should get there. Let's hold off. Let's at the end of the episode, let's talk about just that we're not that far away from another, you know, seismic league changing offseason in 2021. So before we get to that, though, and before we move on to these other player movement events, let's just focus on Masai's question of these expiring contracts. He's got three veterans: Kyle Lowry, Marc Gasol, who opted in, exercised his player option, and Serge Ibaka. All three guys seem to me like championship caliber players that the league got a good close-up view of just this past offseason with the run to the title. Are they guys that Masai is shopping and trying to get picks for, or a young player? Or is he holding onto them and letting Siakam and OG kind of step up and see what they can do with this veteran support?
Right. Yeah. So it's the main question that we're dealing with now moving forward. You know, there are arguments for both sides. I lean towards we should be shopping them. As much as, you know, Kyle Lowry is near and dear to my heart, I think, you know, it might be cool for both sides to, you know, maybe trade Kyle to a potential another championship contending team to give him another chance at a chip. I think, you know, my love for Kyle transcends like needing him to be with the Raptors. If there's somewhere else we can send him in order to be able to potentially contend again and get himself more rings, I would be happy to do that for him. And also, I think, you know, as the logical sort of taking out emotion from the equation, the logical move is, you know, we're not a championship contending team. We have all these expiring contracts. We're probably not going to re-sign all three of these guys, maybe not even any of the three of them. And so it makes sense to shop them and try to get as much value out of them as possible rather than see them, you know, walk or nothing come free agency. So that is the direction I lean towards. I get the argument that, you know, keep the core, let them go through this season, make a nice little playoff run, and have, you know, the young guys grow under the tutelage of the vets. So that makes sense to me, but I lean towards, you know, testing the market and seeing what we can get. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think you have to shop them and see what kind of offers you're getting. I have to say, as a fan, I would love to see them just stick together and provide Siakam and OG and Fred a little bit of cover. You know, it won't, all the pressure won't be on them all of a sudden, because you'll still have these veterans who are making a lot more money and who are championship players now. I also worry that you won't get enough back. There's just not a lot of teams with cap space, not a lot of teams with assets who are serious about making a championship run. You know, a team like Portland, or maybe even Denver, those seem like the kind of teams that, you know, could add one more piece. But I don't know that those are good fits for those three guys. Maybe, I mean, Marc Gasol is pretty versatile. He'd fit in anywhere. And then, of course, one of the most obvious ones is the Lakers. Like, they could become a championship team if they had Kyle Lowry, I think. But the problem is that they don't have anything to offer us.
Yeah.
They've given up all their assets to get AD. And same with the Clippers, although that would be strange to send another Raptor to the Clippers.
Yeah,
after what they did to us. But
I think how I would approach it would be, For Mark and Serge, I think you shop them aggressively and try to get whatever you can out of them. And I think there are suitors out there, like you said, you know, the contenders slash near contenders, like yeah. Denver, like Portland, like Utah, maybe could use a Serge or yeah. Mark, although they have Rudy Gobert, but maybe even Serge there for a backup center position, which he thrived in last year.
Well, because they lost Derek Favors. Right?
Exactly. They lost Derek Favors. Yeah. For Kyle Lowry, though, I mean, like you said, the Lakers would be a natural fit for him, but they've lost all their assets. And so they probably don't have much to give. And I would hesitate to trade Kyle to anyone but a contender just because he deserves that, I think. And if that opportunity doesn't come up, I would be totally happy to have Kyle stay with the team, potentially, you know, sign a long-term, you know, lower deal to finish off his career with Toronto if that's what he wants. But he deserves like all the respect and you know, I would just talk closely with him and see what he wants and make sure we're on the same page. Fortunately,
there's not going to be too many teams that would be interested in any of those guys that are not on the cusp of contending, right? Because they're big contracts and they're older players. I guess Serge isn't that old, but you forget that sometimes. Yeah. They're veteran players that like they belong on teams that are trying to make a run. So I don't think you have to worry too much about that. But I guess Kyle is maybe the one exception to that because there are probably some teams with some young players who would love like a veteran leader like that. A team like Phoenix Suns, for instance, that could use a point guard.
I wouldn't do that to Kyle.
You can't do that to him. No, you really can't. Yeah. You really can't because you kind of got away with moving DeRozan the way we did because you turned him into Kawhi and won a title. You can't just, you can't just squander your capital as an organization. And like Masai has a lot of respect in the league, I think. And if he went and traded like a veteran player like Kyle, who's given so much to Toronto and who really has made a home of Toronto, if you trade him to like some Masai, random team, you can't.
Masai's not Danny Ainge, you know, he's not a dirty GM. No. So he wouldn't do that.
That's a good point. Well, that brings us to the Celtics.
Right.
Yeah. Nice segue. Nice. Very professional. Yeah. We're getting good at this, right?
Yeah, exactly. These natural flowy segues. We're good. We're natural podcasters. And then
when you do a natural segue, you talk about it, you break it down, you say, that was a natural segue, and then you start talking again.
Pat yourself on the back a little bit. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, I mentioned that I'm Massachusetts bound in the fall, and I will be behind enemy lines in cheering on the Raptors next year. The Celtics, they've gotten rid of Kyrie Irving. I think that's the way they feel. That's the way they look at it. Celtics fans are happy to see Kyrie go after that.
They're like,
season.
We got better by losing him.
Right. That's the way people feel. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. If you look at the like advanced numbers, Kyrie had a great season last year, but obviously he kind of self-destructed in the playoffs. And embarrass themselves against Milwaukee. So they seem like they have a kind of new lease on life, getting rid of him and bringing in Kemba Walker. That was a big move because Kemba seemed like he might be a lifetime Charlotte Hornet, and he priced them out with his All-NBA performances and was just too expensive. So he ends up going to the Celtics. What do you think about that move? Are the Celtics better next year?
I'm a known Celtics hater, so take what I say with a grain of salt, you know, all the Celtics fans that listen to this podcast. But I'm low on the Celtics next year. So, I mean, keep in mind they swapped Kyrie for Kemba, which, you know, best case scenario, I mean, to be fair, like that's much better locker room presence. I'm sure Kemba seems like a great teammate. So maybe the other teammates will be emboldened and feel better about that. But let's just say that a Kyrie for Kemba is, you know, net neutral. I think that's fair to say. Yeah. I'd say on basketball wise, I think Kyrie is slightly better. But you know, locker room wise, blah, 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 intangibles, et cetera. Kemba has edge, but people forget to mention that then they switched Al Horford for Enes Kanter effectively. And I think that's a huge step down. And I think people underestimate how much Al Horford was crucial to this Celtics team, especially come playoff time. You know, Al Horford, his ability to stretch the floor, his playmaking, he was an essential part of unlocking that Celtics offense. And he was obviously, you know, really great on defense, stopping guys like Joel Embiid. Like, what are the Celtics going to do when they match up with the Sixers next year? If they do, who's going to stop, you know, the big long lineup that the Sixers have, just starting with Joel Embiid, right? Like, are you really expecting Enes Kanter to be able to defend Joel? Like, what are we doing here, right? And
Kanter's a pretty marginal, like, rotation guy, let alone a replacement for Horford. So, yeah, no, I agree. I think the Celtics took a step back.
Honestly, I'm serious about this. I think if the Raptors and Celtics faced off in the playoffs, I think the Raptors could beat them. I'm not saying they would be the favorites, but I think that we could give them a run for their money.
But you're assuming that we have the vets.
We didn't, you know, trade away any of our vets and just ran it back. I mean, frankly, I think we would have. I mean, I would have to think about it a little bit more. But where I stand right now is the Raptors. I would take the Raptors in like 6 or 7 in that series. Just currently, like roster constructions. Maybe the Celtics have a few more moves up their sleeve. Yeah, but I'm just not that high. So Kemba is a shorter point guard. And I don't remember which podcast I was listening to, but shorter point guards in the playoffs have a tough time because teams tend to double team them. And shorter point guards have a much harder time getting out of double teams, just because they don't have that length. And the Raptors would have, you know, really great. I mean, we are an excellent defensive team. We didn't talk about the Raptors offseason moves, but I mean, the current roster construction is a stellar defensive team. So I think, we would have that, and we would have, you know, the big guys like Serge and Mark to give Enes Kanter a headache. So, I mean, I don't know. Unless, you know, people are anticipating a big jump from Tatum or Brown, which we didn't really see last year, I'm pretty low on the Celtics team. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that's what the Celtics are banking on, is that they are going to be opening up space for Tatum and Brown and even Hayward to kind of rediscover what he had and just get back on track and be prospects that you should be excited about. That's not what we saw last year, but if you go back to the year before, when Kyrie was out, they looked great. They looked like an exciting core to build around for the next decade. Like, they looked like a legit,
I think,
modern. But I don't know if it's there. I don't know if it's there. Tatum working out with Kobe and shooting terrible jump shots all year from the mid-range, that was a very damning, like, trend.
Yeah.
I don't understand how we ended up doing that.
And keep in mind, they also lost Marcus Morris, who was great for them for stretches last year, giving them some essential outside shooting. And even, you know, the nights that Kyrie sat, it would often be like guys like Terry Rozier, who they also lost, stepping up in a backup role. And obviously Al Horford was essential as well. One of the key matchups that I remember was late in the season last year, was the Celtics versus the Sixers. I think it was the first game after the All-Star break, and Kyrie sat, and the Celtics managed to pull off that win. But I remember it was in large part because of the brilliance of Al Horford being able to defend Joel on one side and then stretch the floor on the other and hit big shots. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm pretty low on them. We'll see. Obviously, this is all speculative, but, you know, fuck the Celtics anyway. So,
yeah, I think they do have another move to make, and then we'll get a better sense of what their identity is going to be. But right now, they're not scary anyway. This team that scares me, the team that I'm actually worried about next year, based on, especially coming out of this playoff run, where the one team that really, I don't know, that really shook me up and like made me doubt the Raptors was the 76ers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they went out and got Horford, who is this incredible, versatile player that's ideal for the modern game. And clearly he was motivated for a change and sought the Sixers out. And then they let Jimmy get away, but they recoup it a little bit by getting Richardson back. And so now they have this supersized roster. It was already one of the biggest starting lineups in the league. Now it's even bigger. They seem like they've got 5 guys to start for them who can kind of do everything. And a bunch of two-way players, a bunch of talented players. I guess there's a question mark about whether or not they've got shooting because they lose Redick. What do you think about the Sixers offseason?
Yeah, I think so. My stance is I think that they're potentially a little bit worse than they were last year, but they were an excellent team last year. There's potential for them to make up for the lack of shooting with all their length and just being a defensive juggernaut. That's the scariest thing about that team, and something I'm actually pretty excited to watch. Honestly, they're one of my top teams to watch next year. Is just like having this supersized lineup, which is like kind of unlike the general trend that we've been seeing in the NBA. And I think honestly, this Golden State dynasty coming to an end has kind of opened up the door for the bigger teams to kind of shine again. I don't know if you remember like that the OKC versus Golden State matchup a few years ago where OKC went up 3-1. People thought that, you know, OKC was going to pull this off being the 73-9 Warriors. OKC, I remember just watching that team and just being like, Golden State can't handle the length of this team. It's the length of this team that's killing the Warriors. And people often speculated that maybe that was the way to answer the death lineups of Golden State. And I think now that that death lineup is gone, there's even more of an opportunity for longer, versatile lineups like the one that the Sixers have to dominate this league. And I'm excited to watch it. It'll be something new and interesting to watch next year.
Yeah, I mean, that was obviously Golden State's conclusion too, right? Because they recruited Durant heavy to basically shore up their weakness, which was running into a more athletic, longer team that could just kind of shut them down and get out in transition and kind of overcome the incredible shooting that Golden State has enjoyed. But I think that team could be better than they were last year. Not necessarily more talented. Like, I think Jimmy is a huge loss. I think Jimmy Butler is one of the best players in the game. But I think they're going to have a lot more chemistry and much more of like a clear pecking order in terms of like who the go-to players are. I guess there's a big question mark, though, late game scenarios, you know, when the defense is really checked in lockdown, and who's the guy who can kind of create the shot. Yeah. And I guess Jimmy did that for them, and now he's not going to be there. Instead, Jimmy's with Miami. He's with the Heat. I was a little surprised by this move, not because I think it's a natural fit for Jimmy's personality to be with Pat Riley and the Heat, and with Spo, but their lineup around him doesn't inspire a lot of confidence. I mean, where do you have the Heat next year now that they have their kind of star player in Jimmy Butler?
Yeah, it was a funny move to see Jimmy like at the start of the year, you know, blow up the Minnesota situation and talk about how all he cares about is winning, to have the opportunity to join potentially Kawhi in the Clippers or come back with the Sixers team with Kawhi out of the conference and be, I think, the favorites. And then to decide to join this Miami team with really not much around him, especially with losing Josh Richardson now, right?
Right.
So that was kind of funny to me. So, you know, despite the fact that Jimmy says that all he cares about is winning, I think I agree with you that this Miami situation fits his personality. If you follow him much on social media, you see that he's really an international man, let's just say, and he likes to be, you know, part of the scene. He likes to travel, likes to be in the nice weather. And so Miami seems to suit his personality that way, plus their whole, you know, grit and grind kind of feel that team also kind of suits his personality and his work ethic. But that team to me is like no better than the Celtics team that I just described earlier that I wasn't that high on.
Yeah.
I think they're around that level. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, they're not scary either. They may be another team that's got kind of another move to make. I thought they might get in on Russ, which maybe we should talk about that. Well, I guess we should finish our Eastern Conference roundup here, but I thought they might get in on Westbrook just for like the star power thing, just to get some attention. It didn't make a lot of sense to me as a fit, but I thought they might. But there must be something they can do to give Jimmy some help. I'm assuming that's the plan. Miami's still like a popular destination, and it's still a respected organization. And Jimmy, I think, acquitted himself well last year as one of the best players in the Eastern Conference. So they have a pitch and moves to make, maybe. But
They don't have much cap space, though.
No, and they're capped out.
And Jimmy's getting older, so yeah, they need to make a move. I don't know.
They'd have to do it this offseason, I think, if they're going to open a window for themselves. But I agree. They don't seem that scary.
At least they'll be fun to watch. Like the last year, they were kind of boring.
Well, and they should be a playoff team. Would have a chance of maybe upsetting in the first round. Actually, that's one thing. The Raptors. I'm not sure the Raptors would want to face Jimmy Butler in the first round next year without Kawhi to lock him down.
No, yeah. Yeah, Jimmy's been an infamous Raptors killer. So,
I think that's what's exciting about them, is it does give you another team in the East that's like could make some noise in the first or second round. But yeah, they definitely need more if they want to contend for a title.
Yeah, yeah, and just to I guess round up. So I mean, it seems to be like the line currently is that the two favorites coming out of the East are either Milwaukee or the 76ers. know, yeah, we talked about the Sixers.
Yeah, so talk about the Bucks really quickly. The main thing that struck me about their offseason was that they lost Brogdon, who I thought was essential to what they did, especially in playoff basketball. So I don't think that they're better.
Absolutely, yeah. No, they're definitely not better than they were last year in no way, shape, or form, right? They, I mean, any Raptors fan who watched that Bucks rap series last year knows that Brogdon was an essential part of that team. And anytime, you know, things were kind of going wrong and Giannis was being stonewalled at the basket, the key guy who came through and was able to pull them back into games was Malcolm Brogdon. It wasn't Eric Bledsoe. George Hill came in and out. You know, he had his good stretches. But it was really Malcolm Brogdon was the most reliable guy. And every time he had the ball in his hands, I was worried as a Raptors fan. So them losing him, I think, is a huge loss. And I think that's being actually underplayed.
Yeah,
we didn't even actually mention, this is actually a little bit rude, we should mention the Indiana Pacers.
I was just going to say, because that's where Brogdon ends up, and he's gonna be playing with Depot. I don't know what Oladipo's health status is. I don't know if he comes back at the beginning of the year, or if we're not going to see him till midpoint or something. But that backcourt should be insane in the playoffs.
That's the biggest question mark for that team is Oladipo's status. But yeah, they got Brogdon. They've got TJ Warren for essentially nothing from Phoenix.
I like TJ Warren. I wish the Raptors got him.
Yeah, I dig TJ Warren. So I think Indiana is a team to look out for, actually. They might be able to make some noise next year. I would put them ahead of the Celtics and the Heat in terms of the pecking order. Coming back to, I still think top two, I mean, just sheerly because of Giannis and, you know, his stardom and his potential leap next year. And they still have lots of shooting around him. And I think Giannis plus lots of shooting is a killer team. And
they'll win a lot of games again. They'll be fine in the regular season without Brogdon. It's just like you said, in those crunch moments in the playoffs, whenever things aren't going according to plan, not having that versatile big guard in Brogdon presents new problems.
Yeah, especially if Bledsoe's going to keep disappearing every year, which maybe next year is the year. I don't know. But last point, I think, on the Eastern Conference, the Sixers, to me, their biggest Achilles heel, I think, is their lack of shooting. They still have a decent amount of shooting, but I think they don't have as many reliable shooters. And that might change. You know, they might pick up some guys throughout the year. But that's the thing I would look out for watching the Sixers is, you know, how are they going to be able to spread the floor to allow for Joel Embiid to kind of cook in the interior? Sorry, did you want to go ahead?
Well, no, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Then I was just going to flip to the Bucks and say, on the Bucks side, I think they have lots of shooting and they have Giannis. But the key thing is that who is their sort of reliable guy in the playoffs? The guy who you know can generate buckets for you.
Well, they're paying Middleton to be that guy, but he was not necessarily that guy last year.
And maybe Middleton will step up, but that's the key thing is when the team is doubling Giannis, stonewalling him, you need reliable shooters to come through or reliable ball handlers to make some noise, right? So,
So we're not quite all the way through this yet because there was one other headline-grabbing team, maybe the biggest one outside of the Clippers with Kawhi, was KD and Kyrie teaming up with the Brooklyn Nets.
Oh my God.
we almost made it through this podcast without them. And I have to say, I think that says something about, maybe we're misreading it, but I think it says something about a little bit about the way this has kind of landed and been disseminated across the league is that with KD out for next year, I don't know that anyone's convinced that Brooklyn's a title contender yet, right? There's real question mark about how good they're going to be with only Kyrie. And they overpaid DeAndre Jordan, hilariously. They do have good young players, but we just saw Kyrie struggle with good young players in Boston. So I'm not really sure what to make of them right now. I think when KD's back, if he's 80, 90% of what he was before he went down with the Achilles injury, that team becomes a top tier team, a contender. But we're not going to see that next year, I don't think. So
yeah.
What do you think about Brooklyn? And then I think we should just have this conversation about Brooklyn, and then we should sum up the Eastern Conference, because I just want to point something out when we do that. But
yeah.
What do you think about the Nets?
Yeah, it's funny that we went through like this whole Eastern Conference roundup and almost forgot about Brooklyn. And it's like you said, it's partly because Brooklyn kind of, they formulated their team right at when the clock hit basically 6 o'clock on June 30th, yeah. KD announced and Kyrie, obviously we knew he was going to Brooklyn by that point. And then everything happened after that, all the craziness. And so we've kind of forgotten about Brooklyn. But like you said, I mean, with KD out next year, you can only view Brooklyn as the Kyrie, as basically a D'Angelo for Kyrie swap. Plus, I guess, DeAndre Jordan, if you want to actually consider that.
Right. I mean, that doesn't help them, DeAndre Jordan.
No, it does not. And if anything, if it takes away minutes from Jared Allen, I think that's a negative.
Oh, it's a huge overall. Negative. Yeah. Does that, yeah.
But yeah, like you said, it's going to be funny to watch. And another like just entertaining team to watch next year, you know, it'll either be Kyrie creating this whole repeat scenario again with the young guys and grumblings and talking about who knows what and all this philosophical stuff and and the Brooklyn team and the young guys just being confused around them, which would be entertaining in its own right. Or it works out great and Kyrie's having the best time with the young guys and then have all the Celtics fans sort of come out and just grumble and say, oh, yeah. What the heck is with this guy, you know, like Kyrie and you know, he abandoned us in Boston, et cetera, et cetera. So it'll be entertaining either way. But like you said, they're not, I think, a team to take seriously in terms of championship contention until next year when Kevin Durant comes back and we see what he's like coming off this devastating injury.
Well, and I'll also maybe point out, I don't know if there's any incentive to do this because I think they like their young group, but they have players that teams would be interested in if they started offering them up. So, I mean, if Kyrie hits and it works and Kyrie looks great and you know KD's looking good, you know, if his rehab's going well or whatever and he's coming back, but they're not going to contend next year. They have some redundancies in that roster, like, I guess with Russell moved out, but they have Dinwiddie, they have LeVert, they have Jared Allen, they have this, like, good young group that you could flip one or two of those guys for a star, probably.
Yeah, potentially. That's actually a good point. I don't think I've heard that one yet. So
I don't know what the cap situation would be. That's always the trouble with that. But they have players that, you know, a rebuilding team would be interested in. So if there's an aging star out there that wants out, they could potentially do that. But I don't think that's in the plans right now. And they were a playoff team without Kyrie or KD, so they'll be a factor too.
And they
would be another dangerous first round team.
Absolutely, and they're a fun team. Like, I like their supporting cast. I like those guys.
I love Caris LeVert.
Spencer Dinwiddie. I like Jared Allen as well. So all those guys.
Well, that's important too. I think Spencer Dinwiddie is really tight with Kyrie. So
right.
And he was kind of in on this. So there is at least a little bit more like of a locker room situation there where Kyrie hopefully can find his spot. And also the whole thing that screwed them up in Boston really was that year of being injured, right? Like his first year there, and Kyrie didn't get to play with Tatum and Brown and develop chemistry in the playoffs with them. And they ended up doing so well. And it created, I think, a lot of like resentment and confusion about whose team it was. So he's not walking into that again, barring an injury. He's going to have a chance to figure it out right from the beginning. And they could be very good next year, even though they're not likely to contend. But it seems like we're overlooking them for good reason, which is that KD's not going to be there.
Yeah. Do you see any potential tension with this whole Kevin Durant being injured all year and then coming back and the whole,
yeah.
Because both, yeah. I mean, I think Kyrie and KD are kind of sensitive guys. That's my sense. Right. And so him being apart from the team for a whole year and coming back, I sense some drama happening there, which will be fun to watch, but could cause,
I think they're so close that they'll be okay, but it could end up being a problem with the rest of the team, especially if there is like an unexpected drop off. Like this was a fun team to watch last year and root for, and if this transition doesn't go smoothly, a lot of people could kind of be alienated by that and wonder why it was so important to go and get Kyrie and KD when they already had this good young group going. But anyway, I think we should wrap the Eastern Conference there. There's a couple other things to get to, but what I wanted to point out is we went through this Eastern Conference kind of rundown. None of the teams stood out to me as like really scary. And it made me wonder if we shouldn't maybe just hold on to what we have as Raptors fans and keep this group together. And maybe if Siakam does take a significant step forward, does develop that jump shot, and OG fits as a starter, you could have a really good, deep team that's come off of that's defending the title and that has a chip on their shoulder. I'm not sure that they'd be scared of Kemba or the 76ers or, you know, the solo Jimmy on the Heat or Kyrie. I don't know. Does the way we've described the Eastern Conference make the case that the Raptors should consider just, you know, rolling the dice? Maybe you come out of the East again somehow.
Yeah, I mean, there is a case. I think there is a case, definitely. I mean, it also makes it even more kind of disappointing that we didn't keep Kawhi, just because it feels like our path to the finals is even easier this year if we had Kawhi than last year.
Yeah, they're the clear favorites. They would have been a clearer favorite to me than I think even Kawhi and PG, if only because they'd be playing in the East with Kawhi.
Exactly,
you know, if only they have an easier path, but that definitely added to the heartbreak, you know,
right,
when this all went down. But I don't know, it's just interesting hearing you talk about some of these teams, because I get the sense you've spent a little more time thinking about this than I have, but it seems like, I don't know, none of these teams are jumping off the page as like world beaters next year in the East.
Yeah, the one, I mean, I, like I said earlier, the two teams that do genuinely scare me and like make me think that, although like we listed all the flaws of these teams, I think the Bucks and the Sixers are still, I think, clear cut, a tier above this current Raptors team.
I agree, barring
a jump from Pascal and OG.
I was just going to say.
And it's clearly what Masai is doing. I think there were reports that said as such that Masai is clearly going to wait. And if he's going to make any moves, it'll be around the deadline time or sometime in the middle of the season.
That makes sense.
See what he's got in his hands. And if he thinks we have a shot, run it back, you know. And if there's, on the other hand, if there's like a great deal that comes along for Mark or Serge or even Kyle, you jump on that, right? But definitely see what you've got first. That's cool. Like, it's something, maybe we have a shot this year, you know, some little tinge of hope for Raptors fans for a repeat. So,
well, yeah. And yeah, my own feeling is the 76ers are the team to watch. And then the Raptors, the internal development with Siakam and OG, because if Siakam and OG take steps forward, then we have the defensive group to deal with Giannis again, you know? And we have the defensive group to deal with the perimeter, Kemba, Kyrie, Jimmy, these perimeter players. So I guess earlier we talked about what would you do, whether you're shopping these vets or you're running it back. And I guess you split the difference and you hang around and you see what you end up with Siakam and OG.
Yeah. And then you
make your move.
We haven't really talked about the offseason moves that the Raptors have made, but I mean, I think we got some interesting pieces. Stanley Johnson, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and
that lights out shooter.
From Europe.
What's his name? Matt Thomas?
Matt Thomas. Like, there you go. Matt Thomas. Yeah. And we also got another guy who made noise in Summer League. Also his name is slipping my mind. But anyways, we made some cool pickups. And so who knows, you know, we might have a team on our hands here, you know. So it'll be fun to watch the Raptors either way, I think. So it's something to look forward to.
They're definitely in the mix. I mean, I think they could even be in the mix if they did end up moving some of the vets. They just obviously would take themselves out of contending. But they're in the mix with this. It's a deeper Eastern Conference than it was last year, but I'm not sure that it's a scarier Eastern Conference. It's just there's a few more teams that you would count on being in the playoffs than maybe we had going into last season. But I think the Raptors are right there in the mix. So we'll see.
Definitely.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, well, we talked a lot about the Clippers already. We talked a little bit about the Battle of LA. What should we hit on the West? I guess the most recent thing to happen was Russ Westbrook is reunited with James Harden in Houston. Yeah. Crazy trade.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. I mean,
you're out on this trade, right? You think it was a bad trade?
No, yeah. Well, so my initial reaction was that I was out on it. And I think mostly it was because of the draft equity that they gave up in the deal. I thought was a lot, potentially something that could blow up in their face.
So you're looking at this right now from the Rockets perspective.
I'm just saying, like, if you want to assess the deal in terms of what they got and what they gave up in return, I think from the Rockets perspective, it's a huge risk that potentially can be catastrophic. I mean, you and I both, I think our first episode that we posted on Raptors Room was a pod where we defended Russ Westbrook after his flame out in these playoffs. That was mostly in defense of him and his character and some of the attacks on his character that we heard from the media after that. So I'm still a huge Russ fan, and I hope he bounces back. But my biggest concern is, I mean, I'll believe it when I see it kind of thing, you know, like we've seen.
He can't shoot.
Yeah, that's the thing. He can't shoot.
And he can't play off ball.
And he can't play off ball. Exactly. And those are the two things you're joining. Like, you joined basically the two biggest, highest usage players ever in the history of the NBA on one team. How is that going to work? Yeah. It's like impossible to say, right? Because we have no data to suggest that this will work, right? So we can speculate and say, you know, these are still two top 20 NBA players. I've heard that justification. You know, if you have two top 20, top 15 guys, things will work out. Sure, maybe. But like, you have to explain to me, walk me through how this is going to work. Who's going to have the ball in their hands? Who's going to be off ball? Is it going to be a your turn, my turn kind of situation? How are you going to deal with, you know, Russ's regression in shooting? Will he have a bounce back year? Maybe that would be huge. You know, there are too many questions for me to say that this could potentially work out in Houston's favor. And so because of that, and because of, I think they gave up four picks in the trade, four future picks that go, I think, pretty far into the future, that this might blow up drastically in Houston's face and leave them kind of in a situation where they are saddled with, you know, this Russ contract if Russ continues to regress, and are left with an inability to add any more pieces because they've lost all their trade assets, and they're capped out. So to me, I mean, I think it's a high risk, decent reward, I guess you could say. I don't know how high the reward is, especially with how loaded the West is, but I don't know. Give me your take. I think you're higher on the trade than I am.
I'm actually very with you in terms of like kind of a crazy trade just from the start. You know, you're trading two terrible contracts with two aging guards that are no longer, you know, what they used to be. And you're putting them with such a high usage player in James Harden. It doesn't really, I mean, OKC did a good job with this trade, I think, assuming they can find a home for CP3. But even if they can't, they've gotten so much closer to getting under the luxury tax that they're, they've come out ahead either way you look at it. But I think I'm just a little more optimistic that James Harden and Russell Westbrook have a connection and a relationship, and I trust Daryl Morey. I think I've been the guy on this podcast at least that kind of thinks the Rockets should have won a title by now, and I like the shooting around Russ. Russ has never had this kind of shooting around him.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's a bad player. I think, you know, I think it's gotten to the point now where he's underestimated.
No. I want to be clear with what I'm saying. I don't think Russ is a bad player. I genuinely think he's still a top 15 player, but I think the kind of team that Russ needs is one where he's the ball handler and he's surrounded by shooting and a big guy.
Right.
And
well, but so this is closer though. This is closer to what he needs than he's had, at least since he had Durant and Harden, is that he's actually got shooters now. He's going to have this problem with Harden and who's going to handle the ball. But I think if they can make it work on a personal level, like if they can kind of lead this team together, which I think they have a better chance of doing than Harden and Chris Paul did, because clearly that wasn't working from a chemistry perspective. Yeah. So I don't know. I basically what you just said is that, you know, Russ has an ideal situation, which is where he can be like ball dominant with surrounded by shooters. And he doesn't get that exact situation because he can't be ball dominant, but he is surrounded by shooters. And one of those great shooters happens to be James Harden, who maybe is looking for a break from handling everything.
Yeah.
I mean, he made that comment at the All-Star game last year where he was like, you know, I'm kind of sick of it being a one-man show. He was getting 60 points every night. Russ is certainly not going to let him have a one-man show. I mean, Russ is going to need his time with the ball and making things happen.
So,
I guess I'm not high on it, but I'm more optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me is the case for this trade and for being optimistic about this team construction is all speculative. It's all based on things that we've never seen before. And so I hope, I mean, it'll be super awesome if the team works out. Maybe Russ is more on the ball, James more off the ball, and they kind of wreak havoc there. And it's kind of this reunion of their OKC days. They form this bromance. And that would be awesome to watch. But I can't, like, it's all speculative. And so until I see it, I can't say that this is a good trade for Houston. But it'll be fun to watch again. Super exciting team, making next year's NBA like a must watch. And so it'll be cool to watch, but we'll see, you know.
God, it's crazy how many teams there are that have like duos or just like have made moves that make them so interesting. I cannot wait for the league next year. And I guess maybe that brings us to kind of maybe a point of summarizing this, and just there was so much player movement this year, more than ever, or at least as much as ever. More big names, more all NBA caliber players switching teams. And the kind of the craziest thing is that we're 2 years away from it happening all over again in the 2021 offseason, because you're going to have a bunch of the same players up for free agency, plus the next kind of crop led by Giannis in Milwaukee. What do you think about this player movement? There's been a lot of discussion about whether this is good for the game, whether this is the new normal. I know when Kawhi decided to leave Toronto after just one season and go to the Clippers and force this trade to get Paul George there with him, there was a lot of panic from ownership and management about how, like, the tampering, and you heard Silver talk about we need to go back to the drawing board a little with tampering rules that we can actually enforce. And then we saw fans, I think generally Toronto fans were pretty grateful and pretty happy with what Kawhi did, and they're handling it well. But there was definitely some reaction that we saw among Raptors fans that, like, things have gotten out of control. You know, like we felt it directly for the first time, where we had one of the best players in the league leave us for a big market team. A bigger market team. There's a lot there to discuss, and maybe we can't get into it all and should save a little bit of this and pull it together with some of the other things we've been thinking about talking about. But I don't know. What do you think about where we're at now with player movement and player empowerment and how we should react to a guy like Kawhi Leonard orchestrating this crazy team building thing he did with the Clippers this offseason and kind of leaving Toronto on the outside looking in?
Yeah. So I think on the one hand, you know, this whole, you know, constant player movement and forming these new teams constantly kind of suits this age of, you know, social media and, you know, people say shorter attention spans and, you know, constant excitement and makes the league, you know, a little bit, you know, higher drama and so higher entertainment value, you could say. I mean, we just listed about how excited we are about this season. I don't think we would be as excited if, you know, obviously remove Toronto from the picture, just as NBA fans, if all the players remained on their teams, as they did last year, it would not have the same potential level of excitement as we currently have, obviously, because right now it's all, you know, in the future. We don't know. We can speculate. We can have arguments about what this will look like. And so in that way, it's a more entertaining product in one way. But on the other hand, if we bring Toronto and Toronto fandom back into it, it did suck to lose Kawhi. And it starts to, you know, as a fan of an NBA team, it starts to, you know, kind of be a little bit of a crisis of identity in terms of, you know, what does it mean to be a fan of a team if the team's makeup and construction, like, either constantly changes, or, you know, if you have a superstar that they might just leave at any moment, even if they're under contract, as we saw with Paul George, right?
Yeah.
And so I think it's important to, you know, approach that and say, like, that frustration as a fan of an NBA team is definitely reasonable, but it's important to channel it the right way. You know, I've heard a lot of frustration directed directly at the players, saying that, you know, either the players, you know, don't deserve this level of freedom or shouldn't, you know, they're whatever. I've heard weird accusations here and there. It's a lot of just knee-jerk reaction out of frustration, which I understand. But people have to be careful in terms of criticizing players at the expense of, you know, taking away their power in the balance between, you know, them versus ownership. You know, a lot of the times you have to be careful when you criticize a player. You're criticizing them not in a way such that, you know, what you're suggesting would just move power more towards ownership, which I've heard from Toronto fans even in their initial reaction to Kawhi leaving and in their frustration.
Yeah.
But I think there's a conversation to have there in terms of, you know, what is the right balance to have between, you know, having, you know, the excitement of, you know, players being able to move around teams and also giving players that freedom in order to, you know, achieve the best situation for themselves in terms of their workplace and their job, right? But on the flip side, like, how do we balance that with being a fan of an NBA team? And I think there are interesting proposals, and I think it deserves, I think, a deeper episode from us, which I'm hoping we'll get to at some point this offseason. But it's an interesting balance and a conversation that I think needs to be had.
Yeah.
Where do you land on this?
Briefly. I don't think you can police the players in terms of like their conversations with each other and making plans to play together or to go to a certain city closer to home, whatever. I just don't see how you can police that, or I don't think you should police that. I mean, they have their freedom, and they're the best. When we're talking about all the players we talked about today are like at the top of the league right now, and so of course they get to call their shot, and they should be able to call their shot. And I guess there's maybe some questions there about like what the teams are doing. I mean, we had that thing going on this year where the Clippers were sending management personnel to Raptors games. I don't understand why that's maybe allowed, because in theory the owners have some sort of arrangement worked out, obviously, to like have the league together. So the idea that like that teams themselves, management and ownership, can actually wade into this stuff when other players are under contract, that seems strange to me. And I think Silver's on the right track looking for ways to have enforceable tampering rules. But I don't think that should fall on the players at all.
Like you were saying, you can't police players' movements and restrict their freedom. And I think that's where a lot of, I think, the criticism of player movement, people often say the situation is annoying because I feel like I can't be a fan of my team, and it's constantly changing. And so they go from there to, we should restrict player movements or limit their salaries or you restrict their freedoms in XYZ so that I can keep my team together.
Yeah.
And I think that is 100% clearly the wrong way to go. As we've said time and again on this pod, the players are the product. You can't restrict them. They are what we care about. And so you want to empower them as much as possible. I think one interesting direction you can go potentially is, okay, how do we get to a point where players are happier in their situation from the get-go?
Right.
And potentially, there's an interesting article and discussion by Kevin Arnovitz from ESPN where he talked about abolishing the NBA draft and how the draft often creates situations where players are unhappy with their situation. Yeah. And, we saw it with Anthony Davis in New Orleans and potentially with Kawhi. And so I think there are ways to address this, I think, but those ways don't have to be restricting players' freedoms and their ability to be happy with their career.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I think we're mostly on the same page there. Let's table that for now. Let's get into that more later on. Actually, it goes well with the conversation about High Flying Bird, which we've been wanting to have. We'll watch that movie by Steven Soderbergh. Yeah. So we'll get to that. I just want to end maybe with a reminder to Raptors fans in particular that as tough as this offseason was for us, we had a week-long show on every single sports channel of the Raptors being the other suitor, the other potential suitor for Kawhi Leonard with the two LA teams. We got a lot of shine as a franchise from not only having Kawhi, not only the title run, but even this offseason where Kawhi... You know, we don't know what his real motivations and intentions were, but whatever he was up to, he certainly went out of his way to like say good things about the Raptors and to let the world know that he was considering the Raptors, to the point where someone like Jalen Rose, who's I think pretty respected, I know he's a former player rather than a professional journalist, but he was, you know, he took some heat for saying that he thought Kawhi was going to the Raptors, but that just shows you how convinced the whole league was that the Raptors were in play. And I thought we got a lot of shine off of it. I think it's really good for the franchise. I think it puts us in a much stronger position moving forward for maybe, I don't, because we've always kind of said, you know, we just aren't a free agent destination. We have to make the moves through the draft and through the trades to bring in these players. And we did do that with Kawhi. But on the other hand, it feels like we were in play for Kawhi in a real way with the guy at the top of the league in a way that we've never been before. And obviously, our next step now, it comes in 2021 when we sign Giannis.
Yep. It's a great point. It's a great point. And it's funny, you know, the biggest sign of how we've changed as our franchise and our confidence in terms of signing free agents is now we're essentially like Lakers fans. Where we're like, yeah, Giannis is coming here in 2021. Like, we're photoshopping him with our jersey. Yeah. And it's much to the chagrin of Bucks fans too.
Yeah, they're
also hilarious.
Yeah, but. Yeah. Well, you sent me that thing that Bucks fan on the Lakers Reddit saying how he hopes, you know, if we're going to lose Giannis, we hope he goes to the Lakers, not the dreaded Raptors or whatever. But that's so funny. But no,
it's great that we have a team who hates us now. You know, that's a sign of legitimacy. You know?
I'll just be honest. Like, I'm fully a Lakers fan now. I mean, a Lakers like fan for the Raptors now. When I saw that Kawhi had only signed for 2 years, two guaranteed years with the Clippers, I was like, oh, hell yeah, we're getting him back in 2021 with Giannis. Yeah. And Paul George, too. We're bringing them all to Toronto. Yeah.
Pascal will be an MVP at that point. Yeah. It'll be great. Yeah. I think I texted you. I was like, yo, 2021, our starting lineup is Giannis, Kawhi, Paul George, Pascal Siakam, and OG Anunoby. We're just going to have five wings.
Right. I remember what I was said to you. I hope you remember this as well. That, you know, out of respect, we should probably reserve a spot there for Kyle Lowry on a better deal, better term, and as kind of a veteran presence for our all NBA, all team wing group that we got our eye on. But no, it's a good time to, honestly, as hard as this offseason was, the Raptors have arrived in a way that we had never before, and Kawhi is the main reason for that. Him and Masai. Masai is the guy who got Kawhi here, and he's the common thread over these last 6 years. So enjoy the rest of the offseason, Andrew, as defending champs, and I can't wait for this next year, this next season. It's going to be crazy.
Hell yeah, Raps are champs.
Raps are champs. All right, man.